There was a song in my youth that said, accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, and don't mess with Mr. In Between. That song is the theme of my message this morning. I can summarize what I'm going to say in one sentence. The positive experience of one person the ounce of positive experience is worth more than a ton of negative evidence. A farmer and his wife and three sons caught a man stealing chickens. In court, he denied that he was guilty, and the judge said, I've got five people here who will testify they saw you stealing chickens. And the prisoner said, Your Honor, does that mean if I can get six people who did not see me steal them chickens, I go free? No. The positive evidence of one witness is worth more than 1,000 people who never noticed anything going on. Now see how this works in our relationship with God. Jesus was walking along down the road with his disciples and spotted a man who was begging by the roadside, known to be born blind. And the disciples, wanting to do a little religious discussion, raised a popular theological question. Whose sin is responsible for that man's blindness? If he was born blind, is it his sin or is it his parents' sin? And Jesus immediately replied, neither. God doesn't operate like that. It's not his sin, it's not his parents' sin. As a minister, I have called upon hospital patients who have confessed that they believe God is punishing them for their behavior by making them sick. And they will as much as say openly, I'm getting what I deserve. I am here because of things I have done. The pastor will let such a person tell about it and quietly let them speak and respect them. But the direct answer would be, if you could do it politely and in a Christian manner, and you can't, you might be here because of your own bad choices. But don't blame God for it. And Jesus said, you're asking the wrong question. Don't ask whose sin is responsible for his blindness. Ask, how can God help him? How can God use his blindness now in a positive way to accomplish something good and beautiful? And with that, he spat on the ground and picked up a little of that dusty earth moistened with his spittle and stirred it into a little mud and then put it on the blind man's eyes and told him to go wash his face at Siloam. And the man did as he was instructed. And when he washed that mud off his face and opened his eyes, he could see. You and I cannot even imagine what that would be like. What a moment, seeing for the first time. And he came back to his familiar place to sit and beg. And everybody said, hey, that looks like the guy who used to be blind sitting here. And others said, oh, no, just somebody resembles him. And he said, I'm the man. And they said, well, how is it you can now see? He said, well, a man named Jesus came by and put some mud on my eyes and told me to wash my face at Siloam, and I did, and now I can see. And they said, where is he now? I don't know. Think about it. He had never seen Jesus. What a moment in the history of the world. Now, it happens that, unfortunately, the day that Jesus did this amazing thing was a Sabbath day. And in his place and among his people, the Sabbath was a sacred time set apart specifically for resting. There should be no work, no labor conducted on this seventh day. In Hebrew, the word sabbath means to cease, to stop, to quit. And this became a very strong time of taking necessary rest, one day in seven. How good for humans that it's this way. But now the Jewish people, who thought about this a lot, began to ask themselves, well now, what constitutes work on the Sabbath day? And they started coming up with a long list of things you were forbidden to do. Trivial things. Don't lift more than the weight of a fig. Don't walk more than a modest distance. Don't wear sandals that have the soles tacked on with little nails, because the weight of that metal would increase the effort of walking. They gradually trivialized the significance of the Sabbath day. Now that happened right here to me not that long ago. Do you remember that night of the great wind that howled across the valley? First time I'd ever heard a weatherman refer to it by a derecho. We remember that wind hitting our home and howling out there, unlike anything we'd ever experienced. And of course, our power failed. And I did what I usually do. I went out on the back porch and looked over toward Lexington, which is about 5 miles on in town. And I can nearly always see street lights and store lights and other things glooming, even when our power is out there in the woods. But this night, everything was out. I mean, it was pitch dark. That wind had done some terrible damage. So we went to bed and got up the next morning, and there was still no electricity. And so I did what those emergency people tell you to do. I put some batteries in a portable radio. And I decided to tune in my local radio station to see what was going on in Rockbridge County. And somehow, with their own generator, the station was on the air and broadcasting. But instead of an announcer giving me emergency information, I tuned in to a satellite feed of two women talking. There was not a live human being in that station. It was all computerized and automatic. And one woman said to the other, they were talking about how to dress, the right kind of colors to wear. She said, "Now you never want to mix blue and green unless it's just the right shade of green." And I thought, trivial. You're talking to me about that stuff when my world is falling apart. I sent a letter to my emergency thing in Richmond, let them know what happened so they won't give that advice too freely about your portable radios. They don't make much sense in today's world. So they took him to the Pharisees, the ones who had made these regulations. Now, bear in mind that they had fallen into a trap that we still fall into today. And that is the belief that we have got God all figured out. That we know the truth about God and exactly how to please God. And anyone who doesn't agree with us may therefore be classified and disregarded as a sinner. And so they asked the man what happened, and he told them, he made some mud, put it on my eyes, told me to wash my face, and I could see. And they said, "He couldn't have done that. This man does not observe our Sabbath regulations. Therefore, he is a sinner. God could not be working through him." The poor blind man, like us, was not able to articulate his faith, and certainly not in a manner that would please religious professionals, the experts in religion. He didn't have their vocabulary. He couldn't say all the right words and phrases to please them. Have you ever had to deal with an expert? He will tell you, "Now I know what I'm talking about." Lightning struck the manse at Rockbridge Baths. Anna was standing in front of a stainless steel sink when it happened. She said the sink glowed blue, but she was unharmed. I was in the living room with the children, and I didn't hear thunder. What I heard was like the great cracking snap of a giant limb on a tree. We noticed immediately that no more would water come out of our faucets. That lightning clearly had followed the plumbing and the wiring down our well and exploded our submersible pump. Now, because we had three small children at the time, this was a moment of urgency, and I called the chairman of the deacons, and he called a local well drilling man who was able to come immediately to help us. And oh, I was so impressed when he promptly turned into our driveway. He had this magnificent truck fixed up with his drilling apparatus, a great tower that folded over the cab of the truck and was securely in place. All this equipment and experience, we had us a well expert. The problem started when he asked me, "Where is your well?" I had no idea. We had been living in Rockridge Baths just a few months, and where the well was just not something I'd ever thought about before. I don't know. Anna said, it's under that concrete slab right under our bedroom window. And he said, oh, no, ma'am. Can't be no well there. He said, that's against code. You can't drill a well next to the foundation of a house. Law is against it. She said, but I can hear it when it runs. Oh, no, ma'am, he said. Wells in this neighborhood are more than 200 foot deep. You can't hear no pump when it's 200 feet down in the water. She said, but I do. Don't you worry about it, lady. We'll find your well and fix it. And his crew began to dig holes here and there in the backyard in what seemed like logical places, found nothing, not even a pipe. And after a frustrating time of this, he came in and used our kitchen telephone to call a guy who was more of an expert than he was. He called a dowser, a water witch. And that man arrived with a forked willow twig. And I saw him walking all over our yard, shaking his head. Finally, he gave up, went over a little split rail fence out in the Mr. Brownlee's cow pasture. And about 30 feet beyond that fence, I saw that willow twig begin to jiggle and suddenly point down as though drawn by some impossible magnetic force. And he said, here it is, right here. He said, there are two streams out here. One comes this way and the other that way, and they cross right here. Boy, the men with the pick and the shovels were so glad. They leapt over the fence and ran out there where he was standing, dug a hole, nothing. The dowser said, wait a minute, I must have missed it a little bit. And he began to walk around with his willow fork some more. Here it is, right here, just a little bit off. Dug another hole. And all they did was to cultivate the edge of a cow pasture manually. And Anna, seeing them tiring and fearing that they might just leave us, said, won't you at least look under that concrete slab? And confident that it was a waste of time, that our well could not possibly be there, they stuck a crowbar in the crack under that slab and pried it up. And I don't need to tell you what they found. What these experts could not stand was that Jesus spoke with an authority greater than theirs. He said to them, we were not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for us. And they couldn't take that. So they called the blind man back in a second time and said with a solemn oath this time, now speak the truth. Tell us what happened. And the man repeated the story. And they again shook their heads and said, this is ridiculous. And called in the man's parents. And they said, this man claims to be your child, that he was born blind. Can you confirm this? And they said, yes, he's our boy. And yes, he was certainly born blind. As for how he can see now, we don't know who did that or how he could have done it. Ask him. He's of legal age. Now, the Bible explains that they did that because they had heard that the Pharisees had already announced, anyone who says that Jesus is the Messiah will be kicked out of the synagogue. Now, for those of us who take our church memberships lightly, we can't imagine how devastating that would be. It would be ostracizing them from their whole community of support and caring and love. And so they refused to step into that trap and simply said, ask him, he's old enough. And so they called him back in for the third examination. By the way, this is the longest passage in the Gospels in which Jesus is not physically present. And they say to him, he could not possibly have healed you because he is a sinner. And the man's response was very simple. I don't know if he's a sinner or not. But this one thing I know. I was blind and now I see. He presented his one scrap of positive evidence. The Pharisees were at their limit. They were especially annoyed when the man sort of found his courage, could see them shaking back into a corner of their own making. And he said, I've already told you everything I know and you're not satisfied. Why do you keep pressing me? Maybe you also want to become his disciples? And they said, absolutely not. We're disciples of Moses. We keep the law. This man, we don't know anything about or where he came from. And the man laughs at him, says, this is utterly ridiculous. You don't know where he came from, and yet he has cured me of my blindness. This has never happened in the history of the world. He could not have done this if he were not from God. Now, the reason these religious leaders objected was not the fact that it had been done on a Sabbath. That's a technicality. What they worried about was the fact that this healed man walking around town was testimony to the power of Jesus Christ. His eyesight would tell everybody Jesus comes from God and works with God's power. And they could not take that. They couldn't stand the idea of that. And so they kicked him out of the synagogue. They did exactly what church leaders are still doing in our time. Using church rules and regulations, the book of order, to accomplish their own goals and agenda. About 45 years ago, I took my fishing rod up Goshen Pass to Laurel Run, a primevally beautiful little brook starting from a cold spring up on Hogback Mountain. When I got out of my car, one of my neighbors was standing there and said, "Oh, preacher," said, "no use to go fishing up there. No fish, never have been any." Now, I'm from the Great Tidewater, Virginia, where fishing is a serious recreation. And I looked at that little creek, and I admit to you now, it would be like fishing in a bathtub. But I went fishing anyway. And less than 2 hours later, I emerged with what was then my limit in native brook trout. This time, three of my neighbors and a carload of tourists were there, and they were all oohs and ahs. These brook trout are not like the hatchery trout that fight and taste like wet newspaper. These are beautiful fish, relics of the Ice Age, almost scaleless, ice cold to the touch, with a beauty of color and pattern that defies both paint and photography. You've got to see it to believe it. And they said, "Where did you catch them?" And I wasn't about to tell them. But do you see? All the negative evidence of no one ever having seen a fish in Laurel Run was suddenly overwhelmed by one country preacher catching some trout. Don't be talked out of it. Don't be scared away from it. Faith is clinging to one shred of positive evidence against all the shrugged shoulders the world can give. Amen.